Welcome to Disability Empowerment Now, Season 3. I'm your host, Keith Mavridi-Gincini. Today I'm talking to Rachel Handler, who is a disabled actor, writer, and artist living in New York City. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Keith. Happy to be here.
Thank you. So I was just thinking this morning how we met. And the only place I can think of is that we met in 2019 at the probably only theater Breaking Through Barriers in-person workshop that I will ever do. Did that memory place?
Yeah, I think that's where we met. Because it was definitely 2019 before the pandemic hit, just a few months before. And yeah, that was such a cool experience because we got to develop completely new plays in the span of 1 week. So yeah, and I loved the play that you were in. I can't like remember anything about it now, but I remember really enjoying it at the time.
Yeah, I don't remember the title, but I was the son of a Irish or Italian mafia boss who secretly hated his father but stuck around because he had a trust fund to his father, and Anne Marie played the opposite boss. She was either the Italian or Irish boss, and then yeah, and I remember the only improvisation I did is the ending of that play. I'd say a line and then that closes it. But on a whim, I just did a malicious laugh at the end of the character finally having enough being his father's lackey, and that the laugh signified that the character was happy that his father finally got his just desserts. Do I still have the script? No. But yeah, that was a very interesting start to my career with theater Breaking Through Barriers. How did you find out about them?
Oh gosh, I think I heard about them like 10 years ago when I first became an amputee, because I was looking for other artists with disabilities to connect with here in New York. Because I really I didn't know what a prosthetic leg even looked like. Like I had no idea what my life was going to look like as an actor with a disability. Even 10 years ago, there was so much less representation than there is now. I remember seeing like Aviva Drescher on The Real Housewives of New York City. And that was like my first introduction to someone with a prosthetic leg. And luckily now.
So you just admitted that you're a watcher of reality TV.
Oh yeah. I used to watch Real Housewives all the time while I was working out. Now I do a different type of workout. I lift heavier weights and I don't really watch TV while I do that anymore. I listen to music to pump me up. But yeah, when I was like just running on a treadmill or like lifting lighter weights, I would just totally watch Real Housewives all the time. It was such a guilty pleasure. But yeah, representation's a lot better. But 10 years ago, I met Anita Hollander, and she's very involved with theater breaking through barriers. So she introduced me to the company. And yeah, I haven't really worked with them much at all, but I have done that that play festival twice, I think. So it's always been an amazing
Playmakers
experience.
intensive.
Intensive, Playmakers Intensive. Yes. Yeah. It's a very cool experience because I had been focusing more on film and TV work. So to jump back into working on a play that's written and rehearsed all in the span of a week is such a cool experience.
So, how did you get on Broadway Plot, the website where you can pay for one-on-one chats, scene workshops, song workshops with other actors, all on and off Broadway. And I've met a lot of cool people on there, and when I became a actor, because I just do it as a hobby, it's not my calling, and that's why I put it in quotes. I used to go on there and just peruse the different headshots because that's the important tool to use. And then I stumbled upon your profile and I was like, hey, I know that woman. So tell me, how did you become involved with them?
You know, it's so funny. I met someone who works for Broadway Plus at a fundraising event for Broadway for Arts Education, which was founded by a friend that I went to college with, because I went to college for musical theater. And now this friend, Ben Houghton, he started Broadway for Arts Education, and it's an incredible nonprofit providing music classes and yeah, just arts education in general to schools in New York City and India. And they used to go to Haiti.
Oh.
So they're doing really amazing work. And I sang at one of their fundraisers with another woman who happens to work for Broadway Plus. And I think Broadway Plus was trying to be more inclusive and work with artists with disabilities and get their profiles out there. So she asked if I wanted to be part of it. And I said, yeah, absolutely. Even though I can count on like one hand the amount of times I've been asked to audition for a Broadway show. So it's frustrating. And the one other person I know who's on that website who also has a disability, he did most of his work before he became disabled. So, you know, I think Broadway has a long way to go. Like most of the time, if you're on Broadway and you have a disability, I think a lot of it, there are a lot of invisible disabilities and people don't wish to disclose that. And I totally understand because there's such a stigma against disability. But then you have like the one standout, Ally Stroker as Ado Annie in on Broadway, and that role wasn't written for a disability, and she was incredible in it. And we haven't seen that really since, people performing as you know, roles that aren't written with disabilities but just happen to have disabilities. So that's frustrating.
Have you actually read your profile on Broadway Plus? Because I read it and I was like, as the advocate, I was like, come on, guys, stop using inspiring over and over and over and over again. There had to be a better word to use than inspiring.
You're making me really want to look up my profile now because I don't remember seeing that.
Wow, okay. I hope I'm wrong and I'm having like a fever dream or something. And like, apologies to Broadway Bloods who are not a sponsor.
That's so funny. I'm gonna look at my profile right now because I'm like, what do they have up here that is inspiring over and over and over again? Because I don't think there's anything wrong with the word if someone's actually doing something inspiring.
Yeah, but and that's very, very true. It's just having that word be the default word that people subscribe to
Right.
disability. Like I could be going to the liquor store. I don't want someone to say, "Oh, you're inspiring. Could you brought alcohol?" Yet I happen to be over 21. That's why I can buy alcohol.
Right. Okay, so I'm
But
looking at my Broadway Plus account now, and they do say Rachel Handler is a force of nature. And then at the end, they say she is a true inspiration.
ah,
So I'm actually okay with this because they
okay.
list all my credits and like things that
Yeah.
I've done, you know.
Again,
Yeah.
apologies to Broadway Plus. I've
All good.
actually Zoomed the CEO or the executive director, Nathaniel, and he's a very, very nice man. His vision is so wonderful.
Yeah.
And so, what are you doing with yourself nowadays? Have you written any more work? Are you coming out with a memoir, a children's book, a play? I mean, I'll just keep rattling off things.
I don't know if I'm ready for a memoir yet, but after winning the Best Writer in the Disability Film Challenge this year for my movie musical, Unlucky in Love, I decided to start working on a new TV pilot that has been sort of ruminating in my head, and I'm like finally putting it on paper because I've written a holiday Christmas movie, and I've written another pilot with a co-writer. But this one is more for me. It's my voice, and it's very fun. And I hope it doesn't piss off too many people because it's tentatively titled Cripping Up. And it's about a disabled actress who decides to fake a few more disabilities to play Helen Keller in a new Broadway musical about Helen Keller. So it's ridiculous, it's silly, it's fun. There's a lot of like, learning about how ableism exists within ourselves as well as in society. So there's a lot of like heartfelt moments that are just wrapped in a ridiculously silly situation. So I'm having a lot of fun writing that. Yeah.
Yeah, with you better be with a title like that. It better be hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of disabled advocates and activists reclaim that word, crip. So they'll.
Yeah. Well, with Crip Camp, I feel like that really set the tone for like, we're taking this word back. Yeah. Yeah. It started with taking back the word disability, disability pride. Now we're taking crip. I love this movement. Yeah. I actually have a sign. You can sort of see it in my mirror there. It says, "Not today, ableist." It's just hanging on my wall above the window.
Please send me a copy of where you got that, because that's brilliant.
Yeah, I love that one.
So you mentioned at the top that you became an amputee later in life. Would you mind telling us more about that?
So I became an amputee from a car accident like 10 years ago. And at the time, I was really focused on singing and musical theater and getting on Broadway. That was always the goal. But it's been really hard because, well, my first audition back, I sang my song and the, music director and director were like, "Wow, that was beautiful. We'd like to invite you to the call back, but it's dancing." So, ha ha ha, and sort of laughed me out of the room. And I don't think, I hope that wouldn't happen now, although I'm sure it does. But
Yeah.
that sort of set the tone, and I was like, okay, I don't want to feel this way in auditions anymore. So a feature film asked me to audition just through a self tape, and this was like 9 years ago at the time, and I was like, whoa, how does this work? I'm just gonna film this on my phone at home. So I sent my audition in, and they offered me the part, and that was my first film gig, and I had the best time doing it. It was smothered by John Schneider, who is of Dukes of Hazzard fame, and it was a very silly horror comedy. And I
With
loved that
a title
experience.
like that, it better be a comedy.
Yeah. So, from there, I started booking co-stars and guest stars on shows like Law and Order and NCIS, New Amsterdam. Last year I did Interview with the Vampire, and I feel like TV has been a great outlet, a great source of income, and I'm always about striving to be the disability representation that I want to see. So like there have been auditions that I've been a little like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this. It's an angry military veteran role, or something stereotypical, or like it's on a show where they have someone who is playing a disabled actor, but not an actual disabled person themselves. And like, I just feel like I want to choose work that is going to be gratifying to my soul, not only to my bank account. And I feel like it's a privilege to say that too, but
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
that's the space that I'm at. And I just want to make art that's going to be meaningful and expand mindsets to envision disability as something that's not in any way a detriment to society, but something that is just a part of life. And on that note, I'm very excited to play Ani in Cost of Living at Philadelphia Theater Company in February. So I'm gearing up to get ready for that production. And it's just, yeah, it's such a brilliant play, and it's got me thinking a lot about my own experience with disability and tapping into the more vulnerable, angry, messy parts of, that process of sort of grieving my old body and coming into this new body. So, yeah, there's so many stories about disability that we need to see that haven't been seen yet. And I'm excited to
So
be part of
talk
that change.
more about what you just said. And I saw Cost of Living in 2017. Remarkable, ingenious, dark play, but it serves more than one purpose for sure. But you just said something that I want to hear more about, grieving your old body and accepting your new one. And you said earlier that you didn't really know what a prosthetic leg was. What would the adaptation of getting to know your new leg, learning how it works, using it to dance, to swim, everything under the sun.
Yeah. I think, my first big lesson in becoming disabled is that healing is not linear. Like, I thought, okay, I'm out of the hospital. I get my leg, I heal, I learn to walk again. That's it. And it's so not that. It's
No,
like,
no.
okay, you learn to walk again, then something happens to your leg and you need another surgery, and then you need to heal it again, and then you can walk again, and then your back starts hurting, and then it's like recovery is never linear. So that was the big lesson that I learned within like the first 2 years or so of becoming disabled. And then I think I'm also just coming to terms with like the anxiety that comes along with having a physical disability as well for me. That mental shift, like, oh, I can't get to the city today because I can't wear my legs. So, but I have to be there for work. So how am I going to navigate that system, causes a lot of anxiety and frustration. And then like, as I'm exploring cost of living as an actor and as a human, I'm realizing like I honestly did not want to connect with this character or this play when I first saw it 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
I found it kind of depressing and kind of, like, I didn't want to see any parts of myself in Ani's character since she is so brusque and so angry and so North Jersey, which I can't say because I'm such a Jersey girl. I grew up in South
Yeah.
Jersey, went to school in Central Jersey, lived in North Jersey for the
Yeah.
longest time. But yeah, it was very scary to tap into those parts of myself that I had sort of locked away from becoming disabled from my accident. I didn't ever want to get angry about it. I didn't want to go to that place. And so seeing Ani get angry and pessimistic and allowing herself to feel those feelings really scared me. But I think it's something that we all need when we go through a trauma or a hard time. Not to push those feelings aside, but to acknowledge that they're there and use them however you need to use them without getting stuck in them. So in a way, looking at this play now, now that I feel like I've sort of aged into the character and mentally prepared to take on this role, it's actually been very healing and really nice to explore that journey for myself from the trauma of becoming disabled to now sort of embracing what life is going to be like and also knowing the end of the play, not taking any moment of life for granted.
Yeah.
Oh, so I mean, as an actor, there's like no better gift than getting to work on this role for the next few months, and perform it. I'm really, really excited, and I feel like I'm sort of growing into my own as an actor as well. And I think that's also what's very frustrating about this business is I feel like I'm the best actor I've ever been, and yet auditions are so slow. Like, I'm not getting the chance to audition for anything, basically, So it's a very frustrating industry because you can be on the top of your game, you're in classes, you're doing the work, and you're not getting the opportunities. And there is no balance in this industry. I was just talking about this with one of my acting coaches. Like, you think, oh, well, last year I did Interview with the Vampire. I was in a ton of new play readings. I was in an off-Broadway play that got amazing reviews. And like, I thought my career was on fire. And then it was crickets, nothing. There is no balance in this industry. And that's hard to accept sometimes because you want to internalize it and be like, oh no, what did I do wrong? What's wrong with me? And it's not you necessarily. It's just the industry, just the way it is.
So, and that's very true, and I've heard that count that times from my acting friends. But how did the acting bug bite you? Was this always what you wanted to be? Because I know I went through wanting to be a dancer, a fireman, an astronaut, because I wanted to see the Earth from not being on it. Police officer, the whole gambit of things. Would I be good at any of those jobs? Absolutely not. But I mean, I was a kid. You go through phases as a kid,
Yeah.
creatively. I never really imagined myself as a actor, but my parents bathed me in Broadway. Once I saw Phantom of the Opera, Les Mis, and Cats, I was sold. But I never envisioned myself as a actor. I never envisioned I would see disabled actors on stage. How did the acting bug bite you?
Well, it bit me when I was young and I was never able to shake it. I started singing when I was like 5 and I never stopped. Everyone was like, "Oh, you have such a pretty voice." So I kept going and I did a lot of community theater. I did all the high school plays. I went to college for musical theater. And then even after my accident, even after I got laughed out of a room, after my audition, I was like, I want to still do this. How do I still do this? You know, it wasn't something I was ever able to shake. So sometimes I'm glad that I stuck with it. Sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, why didn't I just go back to school for like to be a physical therapist or something, you know? Because it's hard, it's mentally draining as much as
Yeah.
it is physically exhausting. But I just love it. And I almost feel like now, as a writer, because I started writing shortly after my accident, I just feel like I have so much to say. And there's so much that I want to change in this industry that I don't want to leave it. I want to help be the change and be the progress. And there is great progress. Like, I often joke that I got hit with the wrong disability because a lot of times the disability specific roles that I'm asked to audition for are like so not my type. Like I mentioned before, they're like the angry military roles because of my leg. And I'm like, would this be the same if I were like deaf or if I were in a wheelchair?
Yeah.
Or, you know, I feel like we get typecast based on our disability a lot
Yes.
of times.
Yes.
It's so frustrating. And
Yeah.
it's like, if you're going to do that, then you got to open up just every role to actors with
Yeah.
disabilities because it's so rare that like the right person with the right disability is ready at the right time for these roles that are so specific.
Yeah.
And then people are like, well, I couldn't find someone with a disability to play this role. And it's like, well, can you shift it a little bit to fit
We're
someone
out
you
there.
like as an actor with a disability? You know, like if you're picturing a character who's blind and you search the world and you can't find what you need, well, maybe consider changing the character or just like, you know, like let's be creative here. Let's not just fake the disability
Yeah.
then, you know? Like look at what they did with All the Light You Cannot See. I think that's what it's called on Netflix.
Yeah.
And they found a gorgeous actor to play this gorgeous role, and it worked brilliantly. And
Yeah,
yeah.
and they did that with the Hulu movie Run, and
Yeah.
so they can do it. They know how to do it.
Yeah.
It's just not done consistently. You mentioned earlier that being an actor is mentally and emotionally draining because of all the preparation, the auditions, not getting the parts, not even getting the auditions, etc., etc., infinity. What keeps the passion alive for you, though? How do you not constantly, or how does anyone not constantly get burned out? I mean, New York kids like a actor's mecca, but there are so many actors, aspiring actors in New York City. How do you keep the passion alive for a grueling, grueling job?
Honestly, I think it's community. You find your community and you stay in classes and you don't do it for the fame or the fortune. You do it for the artistry. And that is the only way to keep this burning in you. And some people get lucky. They move to New York, they book an off-Broadway show that transfers to Broadway, they send in a self-tape for a leading role and they book it. And they're just perfect for the role. And not to diminish that kind of talent because it's talent, but it's also like right place, right time. And it's incredible. I'd say that happens to like practically no one. It's like winning the lottery. So if you want to be an actor and you want to be in it for the long haul, find your community, make your own content, be in classes. And just stay consistent with it. Sorry, my dog is barking. Is that distracting?
No, I mean, my dog's a barker too, and every time I do a interview, which is a lot these days, I always put her outside in another house because,
Aww.
I mean, children bark at random things. It's what
Yeah.
dogs do. But you mentioned you have a dog, a puppy. And we were talking before, and you just got married this past summer. Congratulations. Is he an actor? I literally cannot remember from years ago.
Well, it seems like 2019 was yesterday, but it actually was 4 years
Right.
ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I'm sorry, I do not assume that's the guy, but it's like that's
Well, it is, but you're right. You're right. It is. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad because I remember doing a comedy bit sporadically with you and your then boyfriend. I can't remember anything about it. We were all in the hallway to leave. So yeah, is he an actor?
No, he's not. He's not in the industry at all. He's in computer programming and computer security. So, very different career fields. And it works for us. I mean, sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish that he would want to like read a scene with me. And he
You
does
mean
very
he?
kindly, but yeah.
I was about to have a heart attack during an episode. What, he doesn't read scenes with you? Come on.
I know he does, but I think that it can be amazing to be with someone who is in the same industry as you, and you can complain to each other and they totally get it. And then I think it can also be really helpful to date someone who's totally different, you know? And we're still finding that balance of we have such different tastes in TV shows, video games, music, our careers, like finding ways to come together.
Wait, did
So
you just say video games?
he's very into video games. I'm not so much into video games.
Well, I just don't hear that mentioned a lot. That's why my antenna, my gaming antenna, perked up. But how did you two meet?
We met through an app called Coffee Meets Bagel. I think it's still around because I know my cousin had success with it. That's how he met his wife. And I was on Bumble and I was not really like meeting great guys on Bumble. So I tried Coffee Meets Bagel. And it's funny because I was about to get off the app. I was about to be done with dating and he just joined the app. So like luckily we matched right in time. And that was back in like 2017. And we hit it off for a while there. I was traveling. I was going to LA to film Goliath, and then I was in New Orleans to shoot NCIS. And so I didn't get to meet a lot of his friends right away, and they all thought I was like the fake actress from Canada. Like they never got to meet me. But finally, I could prove that I was real and we were actually dating. But yeah, I was very blessed to be working so much when we first met. But it did make it challenging to like it almost felt like we were in a long distance relationship, even though we lived in the same city. But then, of course, after working a ton, there was like radio silence for a while, and that's when we really got to know each other. So, And he got a right off the bat, he got a crash course in this is what it's like to date an actor. They might leave town for months at a time and then come back and be depressed that they're not getting auditions and work again, but also happy to stay in town with you. So,
Well, good. I'm glad he passed that crash course too. So, what brought you to New York? You mentioned you were from New Jersey, but LA, Boston, why the Big Apple?
Well, I had only seen myself doing theater up until my accident. So I wanted to be in the city where there's the best theater in the world. So New York City seemed like the perfect place, especially because my family's in New Jersey, South Jersey. So it's still like 2.5 hours from the city. But, I wanted to be on the same coast as them, and I just wanted to be surrounded by other artists, by other theater makers. In New York City, you've got Broadway, you've got off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, you've got play workshops, readings. So I felt really immersed, and I love New York City. After my accident, I got curious about LA. I've been to LA quite a few times. Most recently, I went for Holly Shorts Film Festival because they screened one of my films. And I do love LA. It just doesn't feel like home, and it's always on fire. So I don't know if I could ever completely live here full time, but part of me does want to live on the West Coast at some point in my life. So I have a special soft spot for LA. I also love Chicago. I booked something in Chicago that I had to turn down to
Chicago.
do cost of living. And I was really sad because I would have loved to be in Chicago.
Oh,
And like New Orleans.
Chicago, the musical.
Oh, no, Chicago, the city.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
that's
I mean, I love Chicago because it's like the comedy capital of the world with like Second City, and the improv is amazing. And I would have loved to have gotten to live there and do this show, but just the timing didn't work out. And I've also been very lucky to work a lot in New Orleans. A lot of the bigger TV and film stuff has actually been in New Orleans that I've booked, which has been really cool. And I love that city. And again, I
You
would
wouldn't think that if you want in the industry, but a
No.
lot of stuff happens in New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans, Atlanta, very happening for TV and film work. Yeah. And I love New Orleans. It's the most unique city I've ever been to. It's gorgeous. But also like hurricanes scare me. I don't know if I want to live there full time, So, yeah.
So you mentioned at the top you found theater breaking through barriers to Anita Hollander, who I know and I interviewed this season. We're also on the board of theater breaking through barriers together, not to toot my own horn here. How did you come across her?
Honestly, I think it was just a Google search. I was laying in bed after my accident and I was Googling actors with disabilities, actors who are amputees, wear prosthetic legs. And she was like the first one to come up on that list. She's been such
Makes
a,
sense.
yeah, I mean, she's been in this industry for so long. She's been an advocate, she's an incredible performer. And I really feel like she has paved the way for so many of us. Yeah. I'm just thinking now about like the actress on La Brea. There's a TV show, and she wears a prosthetic leg, and she's like the leading role. There's a lot of opportunities now for people with limb differences, specifically. I mean, again, a lot of the opportunities are military, mad and sad and angry characters, but like that on La Brea is an example of just a daughter, living her life, and I think she has to try to save her family. I haven't seen the show. I feel like I should, but yeah, I think that's a good example of just like writing a character with a limb difference as just a human, and I think that's really special, and that's what I would like to see more of.
If you couldn't be an actor, what job would interest you? What would bring you fulfillment?
I mean, I want to say writer, but that feels like cheating because the two sort of go hand in hand for me at this point. So definitely writer. If not that, I almost went back to school for physical therapy to become a physical therapist. I think that would have been a really incredible career choice because I love working with other people with disabilities. I love strength training, lifting weights, and helping others to like find their comfort level within fitness. So yeah, I think being a physical therapist would have been my next go-to if I weren't in this industry.
So, a few questions wrapping up, and thank you so much for your time and for
Yeah.
rescheduling it for later in the week. What would be some tips that you would give aspiring actors to who are just starting out in this industry, and specifically on how to avoid or minimize the effects of burnout of exhaustion, because that's a very real thing that happens constantly. And as someone who just does this as a hobby, I can't fathom how actors handle the burnout and exhaustion on a weekly, maybe even a daily basis.
Yeah, I think the rejection contributes a lot to the burnout and frustration in this business. So I would say the number one way that I combat that feeling is by not comparing myself to other actors. And that is so hard to do. But I found that the more I compare my career and my trajectory to someone else's, the more I feel hopeless and burnt out and useless and frustrated. So I try to just focus on being in class, improving my work, writing, learning new scenes, keeping myself busy in creative, artistic ways rather than letting my wa mind wander into why am I not good enough? Why am I not booking this? You know? It's so hard to do, but I always go back to reminding myself of why I'm in this industry in the first place. And that is to make work that matters to me and play characters that matter to me. And it's not for the fame and the money. And it's really just for fulfilling my own artistic heart and need. And I honestly don't make a living off of being an actor. I just don't, you know? I think my residuals this year were like less than $2,000, and I haven't booked a TV job this year. So it's like I do this for the love of the craft, and I do it for myself, really, you know? Because I really don't. I can't think of myself in any other profession. Like, I didn't go back to school to be a physical therapist, even though I could see myself doing that for a reason, because this is what I love to do. And luckily, I have side jobs that are within the industry that can pay my bills, like doing dancing flash mobs and teaching piano and voice lessons and public speaking about disability inclusion and awareness and resilience. So I have side jobs that pay my bills that are in the industry, but not doing exactly what I want to do, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. Yeah.
Do you still sing, and how much?
I do. I started singing a lot more in the past 2 years because I did an off-Broadway play, and that really inspired me to start my singing career again. So I've been singing a lot more, but not getting auditions for musicals. I'm really sad about that because I would love to. Like I did get to audition for Camelot on Broadway, and I felt like I submitted a good tape, but you know, it was to play the role that Philippa Sue was playing. So I'm like, well, I can understand why they would go with her, but why can't I be
Yeah.
in the ensemble? What's wrong with
Yeah.
having a woman with a prosthetic leg in the ensemble?
Yeah.
Toni Lopez was in the ensemble and did an
Yeah.
amazing job with the prosthetic leg. And
Yeah.
I, you know, I've been singing for a long time and I know my voice is great. So it's like frustrating because sometimes I do feel like I have the wrong disability for my type. But yeah.
If there are any aspiring activists or advocates who want to make this advocacy their career, but aren't sure how to get started, what would be some action steps you would provide them?
There is no straightforward way to go about being in any artistic industry. As an advocate, I advocate through my art. So If I do want to get involved politically, there are other organizations and people that I turn to, like Imani Barberin, Crutches and Spice, or the Amputee Coalition of America. But I advocate through my artistry, through my scripts, through my acting projects. So if you want to be an advocate and you are also an artist, I would say get an actor's access profile, start auditioning, start writing your own content. You can start on social media, you can start with short films. But that's how I advocate. And a lot of times my scripts are very subtly advocating for accessibility or inclusion in some way. Sometimes not so subtly, but one of the scripts that won me a Sundance Award is called The A Doesn't Stand for Accessible. And it's about the subway system in Queens and how they did like multi-million dollar renovations and one
Shaka,
stop is accessible.
shaka. Oh, yeah, please say that again.
Say what?
What you just said about the Queens subway and doing all the big renovations, but missing the mark with accessibility.
So my script is called The A Doesn't Stand for Accessible, as in the MTA. And it's about how they did multi-million dollar renovations to the subway system in Queens and Astoria. And yet one station is accessible in all of Astoria. And I find that very frustrating because people with suitcases, people with baby carriages, people on crutches, how are they going to get around without an escalator or an elevator as well? You know, so it's not just to benefit the like three people who use a wheelchair every day at that station, although it would be a huge benefit. It's to benefit like millions of people. So, yeah.
So, I hope and I'd like to think that both people with disabilities and people who have yet to discover or embrace their own disabilities listen to this podcast. But it would be incredibly naive for me to think that both groups take away the same things from each episode. So, as my guest, what do you hope that people with disabilities will take away from this episode? And what do you hope that people who have yet to discover or embrace their own disabilities take away from this episode?
Sure. I hope that people with disabilities see that their voices are so needed in the entertainment industry. And if you know you're someone with a disability questioning if you have a place in this industry, you absolutely do. It won't be easy, but you do, and you are very needed. And for people without disabilities, I hope you see in me a person who is ready, willing, and able to work and has lots of stories to share and would be an asset in your writer's room, in your play, whatever it might be. We exist. And I think it's important to think about being inclusive with all of your casting choices. And with all of your writing, you know, if disability isn't integral to the story, you can still cast someone with a disability. And if you are thinking of including disability and you're worried about making it a specific character or a specific storyline, there's nothing wrong with consulting with someone with that disability, doing your research. And then if it's too specific, you can broaden the scope a little bit. I mean, be creative. That's what we're here for. We're here to be creative. So I hope, I just hope you think about adapting your mindset to something that's going to be meaningful and helpful in society.
So, do you have a website, a way people can find out more about you, contact you, that you would be willing to share?
Yeah, my website is rachelahandler.com and my Instagram is at bionic.brunette.
So, does the A in your name stand for accessibility?
No, but it should.
Just had to go there. That was too good of a opportunity to
Yeah,
miss. I
it
would have been kicking myself the
was.
rest of the day if I did not do that.
Yeah, that
Well,
was great.
Rachel, I can tell you how much I've enjoyed talking to you today, and I'm going to be in New York fairly soon, although when this episode airs, I'll already be back here. And I would love to see you again. I really, really hope you know you're always welcome to come back and share more of your artistry. Your passion and the work you do is very much needed, and I look forward to following your career or continuing to follow your career more closely.
Aw, thank you, Keith. Thank you. If it's good to catch up with you.
You have been listening to Disability Empowerment Now. I would like to thank my guests, you, our listener, and the Disability Empowerment team that made this episode possible. More information about the podcast can be found at disabilityempowermentnow.com. Or on our social media at Disability Empowerment Now. The podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts or on the official website. Don't forget to rate, comment, and share the podcast. This episode of Disability Empowerment Now is copyrighted 2024.